The coppery sun shone down on the dusty paddock. A cold breeze pushed the thin dust before it, as it blew lazily across the barren landscape. Patches of ice still lay on the ground, left over from the previous night's frost, a typical day in a drought. John was just leaving the house with his son Tony when Helen called. "Stop, John, you are wanted on the phone." "It's the bank." John's shoulders dropped as he turned back to the kitchen. Tony followed with a look of gloom. He pulled out one of the kitchen chairs from the table and sat down. This phone call was not unexpected, as the bank overdraft was getting out of hand. The high interest rates and the bad season on the farm surely did not help. John answered the phone and spoke briefly to the teller and made an appointment to see the manager. "The bank? 10.30, Tuesday," said John. "Did you speak to the manager?" "No, only Debbie." "Debbie was the teller in the small bank." "Well, that's that, I suppose. Where can we get some extra money?" John was evidently upset, as he left with Tony following him. "Bloody lizard," John thought. He had no love for the manager of the local bank and referred to him as the lizard. Most of the previous man-agers in the bank had joined in with local community events and played some sort of sport. This man had no friends or even acquaintances in the district. His wife did have a couple of friends in the school council. John and Tony got into the battered farm's four-wheel drive utility and drove it to the grain silo, where a full bin of oats on a trailer waited. Tony alighted and hooked the bin to the utility and got in. John drove off to feed the sheep. It was halfway along the lane before John spoke. He had evidently been doing a lot of thinking. "I wish we didn't have this blasted bank problem. Where in God's name are we going to get any money to pay the bank?" The battered old four-wheel drive stopped halfway along the lane way whilst Tony opened the wire gate. John then drove out of the lane way into the adjoining paddock next to the lane way. Behind it, in the dusty paddock, a mob of skinny sheep ran back and forth, trying to eat as much of the oats which had been let out in a trail behind the bin. The occasional sheep would have an altercation with its neighbor, and a bunting match would ensue. Both sheep would back off and charge each other head first. They would meet together with a sickening thud as their heads banged together. They would back up and charge again until one sheep gave in and turned away. This sheep usually got a bunt in the ribs or the bum to send it on its way. A few of the greedier sheep followed the trailer to the open gate, hoping for an extra feed of the precious oats. One of the sheep ran past the ute and onto the laneway. Tony was just getting out to shut the gate as they left the paddock, when a sheep veered past him. "Here, laddie, fetch him back," he said softly to the sheepdog sitting on the tray of the ute. The black and white border collie jumped out of the ute tray and ran up the laneway, passing the sheep, heading the escapee off. Ran after the escapee, and then turned the runaway back down the lane towards the gate. Tony ran out into the lane to direct the sheep back into the paddock. Laddie trotted back to the ute and then walked over, puffing lightly, and muzzled at Tony's hand. Tony crouched down and patted Laddie's faithful head. "Good boy," he crooned to the dog. Tony shut the wire gate and got into the ute. Laddie jumped up onto the ute tray. "Well, it looks as if it's going to be another prick of a day. It would not surprise me if the damned wind sprung up and started to blow from the north and start a dust storm," grunted John, as he let the clutch out and the ute rattled on its way. "There's lots of other places I would rather be at the present time than trying to farm in this dust bowl." The ute drove along the laneway back towards the homestead, which shimmered in the distance against the cloudless sky. Dust billowed out from behind the ute. Usually this time of the year, the potholes in the lane were full of water. A group of crows took it in turns to pick at a dead sheep in the paddock. The crows flew off a short distance and sat in a small mallee tree, which was growing out of a stone heap. "Bloody bastards. They are the only ones who will do any good out of this farm this year," growled John. Remind me to put the rifle in the ute. At least, some of the bludgers might have to pay. The crows were a bad enemy in times of drought, because they picked the eyes out of any poor hapless sheep, which could not get to their feet in the morning and join the mob. The only thing to do then was to cut the sheep's throat to put it out of its misery. John stopped by one of the wheat paddocks. Both the men got out of the ute and climbed through the fence to look at the water-stressed wheat. The plants were stunted and were quickly, day by day, turning blue. A few small areas on the stony rises had already turned brown and died. Tony dug out some plants, and then dug down into the sandy soil, looking for any sign of moisture. He let the dry soil run through his fingers and blow away in the breeze. Dry as a bloody lime burner's boot, the men walked further out into the crop. The story was the same. The soil was extremely dry. The crop must be living on the memory of the earlier thunderstorms after which it had been sown. Well, let's go. We aren't doing much good here. Must be getting close to smoko time. The men walked back to the ute and drove off towards the house, which shimmered in the distance at the end of the laneway. There was a cattle grid in the road with an old worn-out tractor tire on each side to stop the stock from passing the barrier. Next to the grid was a large wire gate, which could be opened to allow farm machinery and livestock into the house and shed yard. The grid was just before the house. The ute rumbled over this and then entered a small bare area, which was surrounded by a house on one side, then a large implement shed, and a hay shed, which by now was nearly empty. Most of the hay that was left in the shed was poor quality hay, which had been rained on soon after it had been baled some years before and had gone moldy. There was a large assortment of grain silos for seed grain and a small shearing shed, which was raised off the ground on piles. This allowed the sheep manure and urine to drop through the grating on the floor. There was a small, oil-cum chemical shed with diesel and petrol tanks next to it. A large scrap heap of old, definitely dead pieces of machinery was heaped up behind the implement shed. John pulled up outside the double car shed behind the house. They got out and walked through the gate along the concrete path towards the veranda. The washing machine could be heard thumping away in the laundry at the back of the shed. Rows of newly washed clothes swung in the light breeze on the rotary clothes hoist a short distance from the laundry. The house was a mismatch of materials surrounded by an iron fence. The front section of the house was built out of the local limestone, whilst the rear was corrugated roofing iron, which was laid on horizontally. The whole lot was covered by a bungalow roof and a wide veranda. The poor house was desperately in need of a good coat of paint. The old paint was peeling off in places, leaving the remnants of the old, previous paint colors showing through. Looking at the paint brought back memories of the previous colors used in the past painting exercises. In the front of the house, there was a series of garden beds marked out with the local limestone used as borders. A few straggly flowers struggled to survive the dry in the garden. These were mainly daisies and a rockery of succulents, which seemed as if they could almost live without water. At the rear of the house, though, there was a vegetable garden. It was watered by the washing and shower water, which was directed onto the different beds by a thick hose led from the sink and shower drain. The flower garden, in better times, had been Helen's hobby, but as money was very tight, the water had to be saved for the necessities, such as the livestock, and the used shower water was for the vegetable patch. As they walked past the vegetable garden, John bent down and pulled a few weeds out from between the rows of veggies. They took their dirty boots off, then opened the rear fly screen door of the house, and then walked into the kitchen. Laddie, the dog, had followed them into the veranda and settled himself close to the door on an old grain bag, which was his bed. Helen looked up from the timber table, on which she had some bread dough rolled out. She brushed a strand of blonde hair out of her eyes with a flour-covered hand. Some of the flour stuck to the side of her face, leaving a white mark. Smoko time already. Don't just stand there. Shut the door, Tony. The flies are getting in. Tony quickly shut the door to keep the small, sticky bush flies out of the house. How time flies when you are having fun, said Helen as the two men sat down at the table. Helen got three mugs out of the kitchen dresser and put coffee and sugar in them. She then put them on the table, then walked over to the large slow combustion stove, got the kettle which had been simmering on the side of the hot plate, and filled the mugs with hot water. What are things like out in the paddock? She asked. With a worried look on her face, as she topped the mugs up with milk from a small jug, the crops look as if they can only last another week or two before they die, and there were two more dead sheep. The bloody crows got to them. Helen shook her head. What are we going to do about the bank? She had not asked John before because he was a deep thinker and would have spent some time remonstrating. To wait was the best way with John. Helen knew that he and Tony would have discussed this in John's own time. John pushed his chair back from the table. It made a screeching sound as the legs dragged over the lino. In the silence which ensued, the tick-tock of the old Ansonia mantel clock, which sat on the smoky mantelpiece above the combustion stove, was the only noise in the kitchen. As if to break the silence, the old clock cranked up and started to chime its brassy clang. The 10 chimes seemed to bring John and the others back to the real matters at hand. John let out a sigh. Ugh. Well, I was expecting that. We've had nearly no income for the last 3 years, thanks to this bloody drought. John sat down at the table and sipped his coffee, evidently deep in thought. What did the miserable little prick have to say for himself? Going to give us a few thousand out of the goodness of his heart, I suppose, he stated sarcastically. John had been worried about the bank loan for some time. He had tried to get some off-farm work, but all farmers in the district had tightened their belts financially because of the droughts. The phone call from the Lizard had been expected for some time. John and Helen had bought the farm cheaply some 20 years before. John had been share farming and shearing in the district since his teens. John had a reputation as a tough football player. Many an opponent left the field with a black eye when standing against him. In all fairness, John copped his fair share back. John had amassed a small amount of cash for the deposit on the farm. They bought it 2 years after he had married Helen. Helen's grandfather and grandmother had come to the district from the Barossa Valley in the 1920s as a young married couple and had amassed a large holding of land. Her father was from tough German stock and definitely was not afraid of work. The 1930 depression had cost the grandparents most of the land, leaving them with just enough land to survive. Helen's father was the eldest son. Big Herman was his nickname. He was ready to help all and sundry in the district. The family had 10 children. Helen was the youngest. John and Helen's farm was only partly cleared when they purchased it. They had put very long hours in dusty hard conditions, chaining and plowing the new land each year, spending many weeks picking stumps and stones by hand to bring the land into production. A lot of the farm income during the good years was ploughed back into the property to improve the land and build fences. When the children were born, they had spent a fair amount of their time being pushed around the dusty paddocks in a pram or stroller as Helen toiled in the paddocks. John had kept his shearing round to help with the finances. Eventually, Tony had joined him after leaving school. The other two children had gone out of the district. David had an apprenticeship in Adelaide, whilst Emma worked at a supermarket at Wyala. Through hard work and persistence, the farming venture had started to pay off. They had been able to upgrade their old worn-out plant with a reasonable second-hand assortment of implements. John had gone to a government auction a few years previously and had purchased an old Caterpillar D7 bulldozer. This had been invaluable in digging some large dams for water for the livestock, prior to the reticulated piped water being laid to the farm, and finally, in clearing the last of the large stumps and stones from the land. This old dozer was John's pride and joy, mainly for the hard work it had saved them in, finishing the clearing work. A few years back, the farm was made more viable with the reticulated water being connected. This allowed them to run more sheep, as they were not solely reliant on the dam water. The dams had dried up during the last summer and were still dry as there had been no decent rains, causing water runoff to fill them. This would have meant that they would have had to sell all of their livestock prior to having the reticulated water being laid on. There was only rainwater in the house and shed tanks for their use. The last 3 years had been a nightmare. 3 years ago, they had only received half of their annual rainfall. Consequently, their crop and wool yields were cut by about half. This had happened before, and as they lived in a marginal area, they were used to such events. The next year had been worse with them, only reaping enough grain for seed, having to cut the remaining flock by another half, and selling the excess sheep for almost nothing as there was no demand for skinny sheep because of the drought. John had borrowed carry-on finance, but the factors of the bad season and the drastically rising interest rates had compounded, leaving them in a bad situation. As was usual in a drought situation, the land values had dropped very low, as there would be no local buyers looking to buy a property in the middle of a drought. To make matters worse, there were only about a third of the sheep left in the district, and most farmers were shearing their own sheep to save on costs. John had been talking to a few neighbors who had informed him that the bank was getting tough and threatening to start selling some farmers' land up to recover costs. John and Tony rose from the table and then walked out into the cold sunshine. "What do you think we should do about the dead sheep lying around? Up until now there had only been a few, but as the feed situation worsened, both men could see the situation worsening." John felt a sense of guilt over the plight of the poor skinny sheep. John got into the ute and drove it over to the large silo which contained the precious oats they were feeding. Tony had walked over in anticipation of having to unhitch the grain feeder. He unhitched the trailer and left the bin and trailer sitting under the grain auger ready for the next load of precious oats. John walked over to the silo and tapped at the wall of the silo, trying to tell from the noise on the iron as to where the level of the oats had descended to. Tony had been pondering John's conversation about the dead sheep. "Why don't we get the dozer going and dig a trench for the dead sheep? At least, it will keep the flies down and make us feel a bit better if we don't have to see them when we drive out in the paddock. I feel as if it's my fault that they are dying." They both agreed the sheep could be buried to keep the crows and foxes away. Tony walked over to the large skillion-roofed shed, which held most of the farming plant. John slid into the worn seat of the ute, drove it over to the shed, and parked in front of the old Caterpillar D7. He turned the rattling diesel motor off. "Get the battery out of the Chamberlain tractor, whilst I check the oil and water in the dozer." Tony climbed up and undid the tractor's bonnet and started to remove the battery. Laddie noticed that John was checking the dozer. This was usually a good source of sport, as, like the header, it was usually the home of some rats. Tony carried the battery over and put it into the battery box on the dozer. "I'll go and let the pup go. May as well let him have a bit of fun too." Tony walked off around the corner and unleashed the young sheepdog from its running lead from the kennel, which was under a mallee tree behind the shed. The dog was pleased to be set free and jumped at Tony, licking his hands, and then ran back and forth, yipping. "Calm down, you silly young bugger," laughed Tony. The D7 had not been started for 2 years. John filled the petrol tank for the pilot motor from a plastic can, then turned the petrol on, and then turned the starter key. The petrol starting motor spluttered to life, shooting loose black soot out of the small exhaust poking out of the bonnet. It settled down to a steady roar. John pulled the hand clutch on the side of the motor in and started the main motor turning with the compression lift on. He watched the oil pressure gauge. When the oil pressure rose, he dropped the compression lift and pulled the throttle out. The big motor roared to life, tossing more loose soot towards the shed rafters. John then released the hand clutch of the pilot motor and then turned the petrol tap off. Finally, he turned the key off and the roaring pilot motor stopped. The big diesel idled steadily, its turbocharger making a whistling noise. The dogs, who had been quivering in anticipation, jumped on the first hapless rat which ran from its dozer fortress. John climbed up onto the machine and sat in the seat. He opened the throttle, pulled the gearshift lever, and then drove the dozer out of the shed. The dogs were dispatching almost every rat, which ran out with a quick nip to the back of the head. The occasional one had the good fortune to escape and climb up under the truck header, or the tractor. Tony walked over and opened the gate in the fence by the shed so John could drive over next to a stone heap in the paddock and dig the grave. Tony then started the ute and drove over, pulled a bale of hay from the hay shed, and tossed it onto the tray of the ute. He took it to a small mob of sheep, which had been put into a holding paddock by the shearing shed. This was the hospital paddock where any sheep which had gone down were brought to be cared for. There were around 20 sheep in this small paddock, which was usually used for a holding paddock at shearing time, either for the woolly sheep waiting for their turn in the shearing shed or for the freshly shorn sheep waiting to be let out into the paddock at the end of the day. John stopped about 200 meters from the sheds next to a large heap of limestone, which both he and Helen had picked off the farming land when they had first bought the farm. These rocks had been thrown into the tray of an old tip dray, which had been converted to be pulled by a tractor. The heavy dozer had rattled the accumulation of dust and rats' nests from under the tracks on the way. The dozer tracks were rusty and squealed in protest when John turned a corner. John lined the machine up, then dropped the heavy rippers into the stony ground and drove forward. The extra effort caused the exhaust manifold to get hotter. The smell of cooking rat manure and urine was overpowering. Finally, after a couple of rips, the smell started to abate. John had scooped a hole about 5 meters long and 2 meters deep, the width of the blade. There was not a sign of moisture even at this depth. This was the legacy of the 3 dry years. The usual subsoil moisture, which helped the crops to grow in a normal drought, was all but gone, a bit like the money in the bank account. John thought as he turned the machine on its axis and then drove the dozer back to the shed. John was not looking forward to the trip to town. Helen carefully packed the eggs into the baskets, placing a sheet of newspaper between each layer to make sure that none broke on the trip to town on the rough dirt road. To have eggs break and leak onto the floor of the car was not a good idea, as the smell was almost impossible to remove, as they had found from a previous occasion. These eggs were used in part to swap for some of the groceries. These were the basics such as flour, sugar, soap powder, and other items of daily use. John butchered their own sheep, and Helen had a pretty little Jersey cow, which she milked daily for their milk and butter. The cow was housed in a small paddock adjoining the house yard. During the night, the cow's calf was allowed to drink from her. It was shut away during the day so the cow could be milked at night. All three were very on edge all the way to Kimber. They were definitely not looking forward to the meeting with the lizard. They had all talked long into the night about the problem they had in the evening, but they could not come up with any answers. The machinery was certainly not worth a lot of money, and owing to the drought, it would only bring half of its value. After going to bed, John and Helen had cuddled for a while. This had helped to take their minds off the daily problems. They had talked well into the night between themselves. Being too keyed up to sleep, selling the plant was not really an option, as if they could survive this year, it would be needed the next year. There were definitely no luxuries. They were living on the bare minimum. They approached the small town. The large concrete grain silos were the most prominent structure on the skyline. The silos would hardly be used this year, which would be another detrimental blow to the town, as a lot of the townspeople relied on this seasonal work for a living.